This holiday season, get Factor and get nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. No wonder it's America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. Get 50% off Factor with code PUCK50 at factormeals.com/PUCK50.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Ryan Lambert from EP Rinkside.
I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And folks, the San Jose Sharks have won a hockey game.
They did it.
This is a big bummer to me.
Yeah, it bummed me out a little bit too, not necessarily that they won, but that like they just beat the Flyers.
That, and it feels like they stole something from us for tomorrow night.
Yeah, especially with the Oilers game. That's it. Like, I wanted them to beat a good team or a spiraling team, and it feels like the Flyers are kind of neither of those.
Well, I'll, you know, not to get too far into the Flyers' schedule of late, but they're spiraling. They remember, they started out as one of the, more successful teams. There was a point, maybe three or four games into the season, where they were leading that division, I think. And they suck lately. It's crazy how that happened, but...
But they were supposed to, right?
No, so, of like, course. Even... But, yeah, I mean, just for the first, like, 2 weeks of the year, they were like, oh, are the... Or the fly? No, of course not. But, I'll put it this way. They're hitting the skids so hard that they lost to the San Jose Sharks. That's how bad they've been lately.
Yeah. Now, I love that the Sharks are a team that is, I mean, tanking, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it. This season is a write-off. I think everyone picked them for, if not dead last, everybody knew what was up.
Yep.
And I love that, like, they were so bad that the GM had to address the team and be like, guys, not like this.
Come on, like, man. Yeah.
Come on. Like, you know, I understand that I've done literally nothing to put a winning team around you, but can you please?
You guys have, like, skated before, right?
Yeah. take the skate guards off before you hit the ice. And they were historically bad for two games. And I get, this is one of those things where in hindsight, it's like, yeah, sure, you're going to be give up 10 goals in back-to-back games. You're going to win the next one. I didn't feel that going in.
I didn't feel that watching that game.
the third period, man.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Looked ahead. Look, we all looked ahead to the Oilers, and we just, it's a trap game.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen, but damn it.
But that third period looked like a Flyers power play for 20 straight minutes. It was insane.
Yeah.
And they got, look, when a goalie, the quality of Mackenzie Blackwood is making you look bad, you just gotta accept it, you know?
Yeah.
Again, he's been good this year. He's been very good this year. So, relative to expectations, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He has an 892 save percentage, but he plays for the Sharks, so.
You're looking at, and you're watching them going, oh, that should be in like the 850s, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
He's going to finish with a 900 save percentage and a 4.5 goals against average.
It's going to be so fucking cool.
But if they had lost the Sharks, and that Oilers Sharks game would have felt like a game 7.
Absolutely.
Like, I would have stayed up to watch that game for as long as it was close. You know, if the Oilers were up 6-0, I would have tagged out, which absolutely could have happened, but
sure.
That would have been like the only way you can get the whole hockey world watching one game in November.
Well,
and we lost the chance.
So let me try to sell you on tuning into this game tomorrow night. If the Sharks win, they will be tied with the Oilers in the standings.
Is that true?
Yes. The Oilers are 2-8-1. for 5 points. The Sharks are 1-10 and 1-3 points. So they'll have an extra game played, but, you know.
Wow. All right. You know, I'm excited, but I'm just, could have been so much more.
Totally. Absolutely.
The Oilers being the first team to lose to the Sharks would have been just hockey Christmas.
McDavid demands a trade in the post-game press conference.
Yeah, to the Sharks. He's like,
they got a brighter future.
I want to get a piece of what they got going on over there.
I didn't intend for this to happen, but let's just talk about the Oilers' whole problem. Mm-hmm. I actually had the Puck Soup Curse 2X from last week ahead of this, but we're on the Oilers. Let's do the Oilers. Hey, Jack Campbell, the goalie who had it all figured out a mere month ago. This guy's the number one goaltender for the team that's going to win the President's Trophy. They put him on waivers instead.
Yeah. And we're recording this early, so we don't know if he's been claimed yet. That was a joke. I'm just kidding. There's zero chance he's getting claimed.
That's right.
Although, again, who was it that suggested that, like, the Sharks should claim him and then start him on Thursday night?
Oh, that would rock. I think
bet the mortgage on a shutout if that were to happen.
Well, I'll say this, though. You know, I don't know that the Sharks can squeeze him in. Yeah, they only have $3.7 million in cap space. They couldn't fit him onto the roster, which is also very funny. The Sharks,
I gotta say,
are not even close to the lowest payroll team in the league.
I hate this for Jack Campbell. Like, I mean, this move itself might be the right move, and maybe he goes down to the minors and gets his game back. But I don't like this story of Jack Campbell as the big bust. He seems like a good dude. And even when he left the Leafs, it was like, I don't know too many Leaf fans who were like, oh, screw that guy.
Good riddance, yeah.
Took the money somewhere else. Like, it was like, all right, good for him. And it has not worked at all.
Nope.
At all.
And, you know, I think it's...
Three more seasons after this one.
After this one, yeah.
$5 million.
I think it's obviously a predictable outcome that he is bad. He wasn't particularly good in Toronto for most of his time. What, and
was it predictable that he would be...
Not this bad.
Anywhere near this bad?
No,
anywhere near this bad. Was anyone like, this guy's not even... good enough to be a starter in the NHL?
No, like, I mean, right now it's this guy's not good enough to be in the NHL. I don't think anybody had it that bad, you know, just going that sideways. But, you know, if you look at his numbers, like, the only real year in Toronto that he was good for the full time was that last year. You know, he only played 22 games the year before that. Obviously in a
and even then it was really weird. Like, he was phenomenal for half the season.
Yep.
And then awful.
Yep.
For half the season.
So, but that's my point though, is like, there were a lot of signs that the Oilers should not be doing this, right? But not, like you say, not to the extent that like, this guy's going to become unplayable in 15 months or whatever, you know? So like you say, you don't want to see anybody just like completely lose it in their career. Just like one night he wakes up and, or one morning, I guess you wake up in the morning generally. Am I right about this?
That's typically how it works. Although in Edmonton, it's night 18 hours a day. So
it's true. You're pretty far north there, you know? But yeah, so like that is, you don't want to see that, but this is, you know, him being a sub 900 goalie at some point in this contract was predictable. Nobody would have said, you know, 20 games into his contract, you're going, uh-oh, you know? And then I guess the more predictable thing is, hey, we actually think we fixed him because he had two good games in the preseason or whatever. Let's give him a run out And then it's like, oh, no, we can't fucking do that. Like, we, in fact, can't even have him in the lineup. So.
If there's good news for the Oilers, I guess. I just looked it up. No bonuses left on the contract. So it's
all just.
Right. As painless to buy out as it reasonably could be.
Man, if they do that, they got to pay him for six more years.
They got to pay him for 6 years, and he would be, it'd be the typical thing where the first year you get a nice deep discount, 2 point something for 2 years after that, and then 1.5 for each of the 3 years up until 2030, which isn't even a real year. Like,
no, there won't, it's crazy. That's one of those years they make like sci-fi movies and books about. You know what I mean? Yeah, 2030.
Exactly.
Los Angeles 2030, everybody. Oh, that sounds scary. You know, I guess that's also true of 1984, though.
Yeah.
So what do I know? But yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, look, the Oilers aren't giving this guy any help. Right? And they're not giving him a lot of help. But I gotta say, you look at the underlying numbers, you watch the games, you know, it's not as bad as people are making it. I think people are trying to run a lot of cover for Jack Campbell right now. And I get why, you know, it's not like the Oilers are playing well, but like the underlying numbers, it's not like this guy's facing 50 shots. You know, he's not in Mackenzie Blackwood mode where he's facing 50 shots a game and 25 are from 15 feet in front of him. The problem right now is the Oilers give up one or two bad chances, let's say per period or something like that, and all of them are in the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. The problem isn't, well, I mean, we'll talk about the coaching in a minute, but like the problem is definitely that they changed the defensive coverage to like match a personnel that the Oilers just don't have, right? Like their coverage schemes are just like fully not working. Jay Woodcroft made a horrible calculation in the summer. Let's say that. And let's also say that a lot of these guys on the Oilers blue line aren't particularly good. Let's also say that. But at the end of the day, you need a guy stopping 90% of the shots he faces at a bare minimum, right? Mm-hmm. And
especially these days when you're got a fragile team.
Well, even leaving that, I'm just saying, broadly speaking, if you're not getting a 900 save percentage from your goalie, you're probably not doing well in this sport right now, you know, as things stand. And the Oilers like can't even rely on this guy to get to 900 most nights, right? Like it's just that simple. There are other problems here. Absolutely. The power play is weirdly bad, you know, but at the end of the day, if you're getting 870 goalie from a guy you're giving $5 million to, you're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're also paying nearly $10 million to a number one defenseman who's not.
You want to talk about unplayable
defenseman. Yeah.
So
what do you do if you're Ken Holland? I
start packing my fucking office up. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the stat. This is the real stat. High danger save percentage. I just pulled this up. High danger save percentage at 5-on-5. Jack Campbell, 639.
Now what's for reference, like what's considered good for a high danger chance?
You're going to want
639 is nowhere near it, but
yeah. A guy who is, let's say, here's a good example. James Reimer, a guy nobody is like, oh, no, there's a great goalie, right?
Yeah.
He is currently 25th in the league. He's only played four games, but he's 25th in the league with an 842 high danger save percentage. That's no, like, you know, on the, once you filter out the guys who have barely played, you know, who, yeah, you know, one or two or three.
So
games.
James Reimer is not good. I mean, 25th in the league is not great.
No.
He's closer to saving every high danger chance to being a literal brick wall than he is to being Jack Campbell.
Yeah, let me filter out for guys who have played 100 minutes at 5-on-5. Let's put it that way. And Jack Campbell is the worst. He's played 200 minutes. He's got, like I said, 639, 5-on-5 save percentage. The next closest guy is Devin Levi, 652. And there's a bunch of guys with numbers in like the 800s. Like almost everybody has a number in the 800s. So, oh, by the way, you know Thatcher Demko's high danger save percentage? This will be our brief Canucks talk in this break anyway. 983.
What happened to him on the one that got in?
I'd have to go back and look.
Thatcher.
59 of 60 high danger chances Thatcher Demko was stopped. It's pretty good. Anyway, we're talking about the Oilers. So, yeah, I think as a guy who picked them to win the Stanley Cup and the President's Trophy this year, first of all, what was I fucking thinking? It's the Edmonton Oilers. You know, your instinct on a team is always right, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this roster and you're like, well, as long as they just have another historically good power play and this goalie that kind of came out of nowhere to be, you know, in the Vezina conversation last season. And, you know, Ryan Nugent, I've said it a million times. How good did the season go for him last year? Ryan Nugent Hopkins had 100 fucking points. That's how well it went for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and I said to myself, oh, they'll do it again. They got the two guys. What was I fucking thinking?
Well, I will tell you this. The prediction contest that I run,
yeah,
the wisdom of the crowds had the Oilers number two as far as playoff locks. Not, I don't ask people to predict cups and President's Trophy and that sort of thing, but the Oilers were the 85% roughly of the people who entered the contest said the Oilers were making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you only have to pick up to five teams. So that's Carolina was the only team ahead of them.
And boy, Carolina's turned it on lately after that slow start, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing I guess we should say about the Oilers is they absolutely have it in their power to turn things around, get it going, and at least get back into the playoff conversation. I don't think there's any reasonable way they can. I mean, I guess it could happen, but it's tough to see them pulling ahead of like one of the top three teams in that division. So they're already playing for a wild card spot. It feels like, right? They're 11 points behind the Kings right now. That's a lot of ground to make up in this league.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they're 8 points behind Arizona. So, you know, it's been a weird year in the West. I think we could all agree. I don't think that a lot of us had the Ducks and the Coyotes holding down playoff spots through 12 games. But yeah,
it's been a weird year everywhere. But the thing with the West is you looked at it at before the season. You went, okay, Vegas, Edmonton, Colorado, Dallas in some order.
Totally.
And three of those teams are just stomping everyone. And one of those teams is the Oilers.
Right.
How funny was the first 10 minutes, was it, of the Vancouver game where they were out shooting them 19-2?
Same old Oilers, you know?
I don't know if I could get 19 shots in 10 minutes in a video game. Like
I could very easily.
Oh,
it's not a problem for me.
You're better at video games, you know, than I am.
But no, you're totally right. Like again, that's Thatcher Demko. That's a guy stopping 59 to 60 high danger chances. You know, and then like you to the point you made about them being fragile, they give up that one goal, game's over.
Yep.
Here we go again.
Are you at all considering a coaching change if you're them?
You fucking have to.
You have to consider it or you actually...
No, you have to consider it for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I think I wrote about this the other day, so this is all fresh in my mind, but I think that, like, when you're looking at a coaching change, you always have to be thinking about who out there is better. And almost everybody that gets hired to be a coach these days is on like their first or second head coaching job in the NHL. The days of like John Tortorella, like the John Tortorellas of the world, your Bruce Boudreaux, your Claude Julians being considered for these jobs, you barely hear their names anymore, right? And so like they kind of pulled Woodcroft out of nowhere a little bit, you might say. Right? Like, I don't think a lot of us were like, oh, Jay Woodcroft, he's a lock to get that Oilers job.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I don't remember the candidates now, but it was probably him, maybe one veteran coach, and then like two or three other, like, oh, this guy's a future NHL head coach kind of a guy. And so I don't know why the Oilers would go, okay, we tried it with that one guy. Why, we got to go with a veteran now. We got to go get Claude Julien. We got to go get Bruce Boudreaux. I don't think they would do that for obvious reasons, right? And so then you're like, okay, now we gotta find a guy in the AHL or a guy who's an assistant somewhere else. But those guys aren't allowed usually to talk to teams in season. It happens, I guess, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
And so like your options for replacing Woodcroft are few and far between, I would imagine, like, you know, legitimate, reasonable options. But
we would assume that right now Joel Quenneville is off the board again.
Yeah, we got to talk about the Chicago thing too, obviously, that we'll talk about that later as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And so if you don't have those options available to you, why would you just like promote the coach of Bakersfield or whatever?
Yeah. Of the assistant coaches, Glenn Gulletson. Remember him?
Yeah, I remember how he was insanely bad at coaching an NHL team.
He wasn't very good. Dave Manson is an assistant. You imagine getting a pregame speech from Dave Manson? That would scare. That would motivate me.
Yep. But, you know, at best, that feels like a lateral move. Like, I don't know how much higher the ceiling is on a Dave Hansen coach team. You know what I mean?
It's not high, but can I throw a name at you?
You are allowed to, yes.
Mark Messier.
Does he have a connection to the Oilers?
You're going to win. It's a lack of leadership. Why would you not bring in the greatest, I don't know if you know this, the greatest leader in the history of team sports?
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this guy was so good at leadering that they actually named a whole trophy after it.
Yeah.
Okay. He's pulling Connor McDavid aside. Now, what I want you to do is guarantee a win in this game in February against the Winnipeg Jets.
And then and score a hat trick to make you a legend. And Connor McDavid will be like, well, can one of the goals be into an empty net? And he's like, yeah, that's totally fine. Don't worry about that.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a situation where he might force their hand. They lose two or three more games in the next week or two here. Their playoff chances are going to be pretty close to zero, and that you would have to make a coaching change at some point then, right? Like, if a team that everyone's picking to win the Stanley Cup and the President's Trophy and all that is like, no, we're instead going to miss the playoffs. Now, of course, they would be getting Macklin Celebrini in June, right? Like, that guaranteed. It happened with Chicago. Why wouldn't it happen here?
Chicago, can I just point out Chicago has Taylor Hall right now?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're winning the lottery.
Yeah. The Oilers still, according
trade
to Money
for
Puck.
Taylor Hall.
Okay. That worked out great last time in Edmonton, so why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Exactly. According to Money Puck, the Oilers are still at 55.5% to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it does feel like this is, you know, this is the time of year where you see, whenever a team's going bad, you start seeing those stats pop up of, well, this is the pace they have to play at to make the playoffs. This is the pace they would have to play at to get to 100 points.
Yep.
And I think I saw something where they were like, you know, for the Oilers to get to 100 points, they would have to play at 109-point pace the rest of the way.
They can totally do it.
Yeah, like normally when you see a stat like that, you go, oh man, like that puts it in perspective. Like, holy crap, if the Sabres are going to make the playoffs, they got to like really pick. I saw that and I was like, oh, well, they can do it. That's what they were last year. They just need to go back to what they were last year, and they'll be a 100-point team. And we'll all be looking back on this going, that wasn't too big a deal.
Yeah. By the way, it's 109.7, so you're closer to 110. That
still doesn't feel
It's not an outrageous ask. It's a big one. So
it's a big one for a team that's like just like they're in shambles right now.
Totally. 100%. It doesn't feel but like also, a fix is around the corner. Although again, they are playing San Jose.
If it's 3 months from now and you're looking at going, oh right, remember they won 8 games in a row in December and that like cleaned up the whole hole they had dug, you'd be like, yeah, sure, of course they did.
Yeah. It's totally reasonable, but you know, with each passing game, now they're like, oh, let's call up some AHL guy to be our backup goalie. It's not like Stuart Skinner's playing well, you know? He's just not.
No, and that's the difference from last year. Like, Jack Campbell wasn't great last year, but Stuart Skinner just kind of stepped in.
Yeah, Stuart Skinner's like, worse. 856 in 7 games. You can't have a goalie stop in less than 86% of the shots you face. Like, and again, I think part of that, a big part of that is Jay Woodcroft was like, oh, the way Vegas defends, we should do that. They won the Stanley Cup. And it's like, hey, do you have like any defensemen who are as good as like the third best defenseman in Vegas? And it's like, well, I mean, not really, but you know, the principle's the same. Okay. But the other thing is the reason I think they don't fire the coach. The coach gets fired. That GM is also out the door with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And if people either missed it in the offseason or they forgot about it, like the Oilers brought in a new team president in the offseason to sit above Ken Holland.
Yep.
Connor McDavid's agent, which is pretty funny.
That's right.
Former agent now, obviously. But so it's not like, you know, you look and you go like, oh, it's Ken Holland. They wouldn't fire Ken Holland. Like they have. Ken Holland was very much on watch heading into this year. Yep. So, because he's got a new boss. That's the way that works.
And, you know, everybody he brought in this summer, I guess with the exception of Sam Gagner, has not really delivered. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, the Connor Brown thing, the guy you want to talk about unplayable. He sucks. And it's not and really his got, fault, but...
And got hurt. We talked last week, I think we did, about the 10-game cutoff that was coming up. And, you know, that because that if he hits 10 games this year, his bonus for next year
is like enormous.
$3 million kicks in and hits their cap next year. So, I mean, there goes the cap increase for the Oilers next year. And we wondered if maybe they would sit him. They didn't. He played game number 9 and got hurt.
Yep.
And looks like I don't think we... I haven't actually seen what the prognosis is, but it was a weird, like, in football, we talk about non-contact injuries are often worse. Man, that's, like, if he actually is hurt long-term, I mean, you know, we talk about, like, the cap hits and all that. I mean, this $3 million riding on it for this guy to get back in the lineup, and soon-ish, because you assume if he's like, I'm ready to come back in March, that the team's going to be like, no.
Undisclosed injury, no timeline listed anywhere that I can see.
But it was very weird. Like he didn't really seem to get touched, and then suddenly it was like something in his core or upper body like just seized up on him.
Yep.
It was a weird one.
Very strange. But yeah, so it's just a mess for them. Impossible to know what's next, barring you know, just more time passing, I guess. Like, you got to wait for the... If they lose the Sharks game, all options are on the table. If they win the Sharks still plenty of options are on the table.
Yeah. I mean, the Sharks will buy them a little bit of time. What do they got after that? They go Seattle and then home to the Islanders in Seattle. So, man, they're set up for a nice little
win 4 games, nobody's got a lot to say anymore.
And then after that, they go on the road, Tampa, Florida, Carolina. So that gets...
Okay, back to problem town.
Tougher. Boy.
Yep. But, okay, let's talk about the Puck Soup double curse. So last week, we recorded the whole episode.
They got us, man.
Boy,
they got us.
fucking Senators. Hook, line, and sinker, man. Fucking Senators. So last week we recorded the whole episode. I would say 5 minutes after we stopped recording everything, the news comes out, okay, it's going to be a first-round pick they have to give up. Okay, let's just record like a, you know, five-minute reaction to that, have Katie stitch it in, no problem. I go out to go do some food shopping. While I'm driving back, a friend texts me. Did you see what happened? I'm like, oh, yeah, the Senators had to give up a first-round pick. No, Pierre Dorion got fired. Oh, well, that makes sense. Guy was bad at his job. So.
Mm-hmm. But it was, I got to say, like, here at Ottawa, it was kind of a fascinating situation because with the team being sold, and when Michael Angelar, like, emerged as the leading candidate early in the summer, and we knew that he had the connection to Steve Staios and other people around the league. We're like, oh yeah, Dorion's done. He's gone. And DJ Smith too. And you know, it's just, that's it. The new boss comes in. He wants his, yep, his own people. And then the process like dragged on and on and on. And Dorion gets to run the draft in the off season and do the DeBrincat trade and sign Tarasenko and all that other stuff. And it got to a certain point where you're like, okay, well, they're not going to be able to make a change now. You know, the ownership finally happens late in the season. And from there, it was like, okay, it was like it switched to now they don't want to change things. They want that stability. That's what Ottawa has needed for years under Melnick, right? Stability. So it really felt like Dorion was like dead man walking, and yet he had the season.
Yep.
And then who knows? But with this, it's like, okay, I don't want to fire this guy now. I might want to fire him in the summer. But if I don't fire him now, how do I justify doing it? Like, crap, I got to do it. And then they do the press conference, and Steve Staios goes, we don't want to fire DJ Smith. And so now they're kind of like, do you turn around after, because you got fans in Ottawa chanting, fire DJ.
Right.
Do you turn around and make that move a week after you said you weren't going to? Or like, it's weird how like a desire for stability has seemingly made this situation even more unstable.
Well, okay. So the thing you said about we don't want to fire DJ Smith and we don't want to fire Pierre Dorion and all this, it feels like when you bring in, like you said, when you bring in Steve Staios, you're expecting a cleaning house. It feels like it was always just one of those things. And it felt like this with DJ Smith, with Dorion too, where it's just like, okay, we're not going to be that good again this year. Like, let's be honest here. We're not going to be that good again this year. All I'm waiting for is for like 1 3-game losing streak. So I can be like, oh, DJ, you know, what are we supposed to do? We got to get rid of this guy. Because that was like the pressure release valve for fire Dorion. Oh, whatever happened to the summer of Pierre and all this shit. Well, look, I mean the coach. And then you change the coach, you buy yourself another season or something like that, and maybe it turns around. Probably it won't. But like this is a tale as old as time in the NHL, right? But then Staios comes in, and now there's that both, like, you know, everybody's got a gun pointed at each other, right? And Staios is the only guy wearing a bulletproof vest, you know?
Yep.
And so Dorian's got pointing a gun at Smith. Smith's pointing a gun at Dorion now, because if the team sucks, that is also on Dorion. And at the end, it was just like, look, we were going to fire this guy eventually anyway, bring in whoever Staios prefers. And now
Staios himself.
Or, I mean, in all likelihood, right? Yeah, he's looking in the mirror. He's like, I think, you know, who'd do a really good job is me. You know, the Dick Cheney thing, right? Yep. Where George W. Bush is like, who should be the vice president? And he's like, you know, I thought about it and it's me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Kyle Dubas this summer, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've launched
an extensive search for the band. Everyone's like, dude, it's going to be you. Just, oh no, I'm going to.
It's crazy how that works out.
It's me.
But anyway, like, it's so you know, they were looking for an excuse, and he gave him one nice and early by doing the most Pierre Dorian shit in the world to me. I fucked up something very simple.
Which, by the way, we still don't know the details.
Yep.
And I complained about that, and I had people, like, tweet at me, like, you know, and then they summarize in a tweet. They're like, what do you mean we don't know the details? There was a blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, no, I thank you for your 30-word summary. But there was a 73-page report on this. Now, I'm not suggesting that the report should have been made public, but I don't know, man.
A little more
There's
detail.
There's a lot of Senators fans who are getting a little cranky with getting things dropped on them without any details at all. Hey, speaking of which,
yep.
as somebody, as like an outsider with no attachment whatsoever to the situation, like I'm here in Ottawa, I'm surrounded by Senators fans, it's a little different for me. What was your impression of the press conference, the owner's press conference?
The one where he's like, look, the league maybe tried to screw me here. Mm-hmm. I can see why a guy would be mad about that if the league didn't tell him those things. Just paid like almost $1 billion for the team. And there are, I'll say this, there are a lot of franchises where if you really want to, you can say, somebody's out to get me, whether it's the media or it's the league or whatever. And those people will fucking eat that shit up. You know,
they love that in Ottawa.
Yes.
And I can't tell if that means that Andujar has done his homework and knows his market, or if he's just, that's naturally how he is and it's a great fit. But like, and it's, in a way, it's kind of amazing me. Because remember, like, Elliot Friedman had a report in the summer when it was Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Maybe it was before the summer. But when Ryan Reynolds was the leading candidate, that his whole marketing plan in Ottawa was going to be like, us against the world. They're right. All out to get us, you know. Which you think on some level might feel a little insulting to a fan base that like somebody was that cynically going to play into their little brother complex. And yet here they are like, yeah, hell yeah, the owner said it. It's great. I was surprised at how it felt like the perception of that was like, oh my God, the owner went scorched earth on the NHL. It's crazy. I didn't read it that way. To me, it was a guy being maybe a little bit more honest than most would be, because nobody in the NHL says anything, and obviously he hasn't fully acclimated to that. But I didn't feel like he said anything that crazy.
No, I agree.
And, you know, people were like, oh, is he going to get fun? I mean, the suggestion, the throwaway suggestion that maybe the league kept something from him.
That was the shocking part. Everything else was just like...
But he said in the press conference that he did know about the Vegas thing, the investigation.
Yeah,
it
wouldn't be a big deal.
Well,
that's what
I mean. That's sorry, man. That's on you. Like, if someone's like, yeah, we're being investigated for this and this, but take our word for it, it's not going to be a bit like, come on. And the Shane Pinto thing, I don't think Shane Pinto's availability for 3 months is going to really tilt the balance of a $1 billion acquisition.
No, for sure. And you know, maybe you knock off, maybe you go, you know what? We are going to have to give up a first round pick. Let's make it $948 million.
Yeah.
Instead of 950. What, you know, whatever. Like it's all rounding errors to these people. Like they don't really care.
I did find it funny, the whole like, and again, people latched onto this. They love the quote, like, I don't understand why I inherited this. And it's like, because buddy, it's because it's not you being punished, it's the team, and you bought the team.
Right.
So that's, glad I could clear that up. Anything else you're confused at? Like, why did you inherit the logo or Tim Stutzel or the organist? Like, you bought the team, man. That's why.
By the way, I'm hearing bad things about what's happened to that organist. They're getting ready to fire that guy.
Yeah.
They're like,
well, that's, I mean, obviously the fans aren't happy with the music because they're chanting fire DJ like, the whole game, right? So it's clearly, you can only play Cotton Eye Joe so many times.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I do want to talk about this fire DJ stuff. And, you know, obviously the Brady Tkachuk quote where he's like, it's bullshit. It's like, you know, it's not bullshit, dude. You know that. Again, is this guy a good coach? Pierre Dorion was going to be looking for any excuse to, excuse me, fire this guy, you know, at the earliest convenience. Because, again, it was just the it was just the release valve for for what was going to happen. So, or what was going to happen, like, kind of inevitably, right? Where it's like, oh, it turns out we're the Ottawa Senators were not actually going to be that playoff competitive. Turns out, crazy how that keeps happening under me and DJ's watch, you know. So all this stuff about, like, oh, fire DJ, like, yeah, man, that was always going to happen. I don't think it's like an outrageous thing to suggest that a team that's dead last in the conference should maybe think about fucking changing the coach, who everybody was like, oh, it turns out if things go a little bit sideways, the coach is going to get fired. Yeah, no shit, man. You know?
Mm-hmm. And look, a coach that has never made the playoffs, has never, you know, like this, it's not like there's a track record here.
Right.
I think DJ Smith is fine as a coach, and he seems like a good dude, but it's not... This isn't some panic move. This isn't like, you know, we're going to fire Mike Sullivan because we got off to a bad 2-week start in Pittsburgh. Like,
how many years of being at best kind of mediocre team in that conference is going to be acceptable for you?
He's in his fifth year as coach, and they've never finished higher than sixth.
If you're the Senators and you're doing the Ottawa, you know, summer Pierre, like all the Ottawa fans are doing, or you're, what is this, the fourth year of unparalleled success or whatever, they're dead fucking last in the conference. Yep. And you can say it's a DJ Smith problem. You can say it, but like, how many people did we have to listen to go, you know, might make the playoffs this year is the Ottawa Senators. You know, the goal is to at least be around it at the deadline and see what happens. It's like, no, man, you suck. You suck again. Like,
and that was the one thing that I mean, you saw it over and over again with Ottawa. I'm sure I said it a few times on the show. Like, it was always summer of Pierre. This is the year the rebuild's over. Blah blah blah, and then the terrible first month. And so the thing with Ottawa this year was, guys, you cannot start slow again. And it was almost like you could imagine them going to DJ Smith saying, like, dude, don't leave anything in the quiver, right? Like, any card you have to play, we must start well. We cannot get into mid-November and be chasing it again. So whatever you have to do to figure this out, go do it.
Only 5 points out with a game in hand, but it's like, yeah, man.
Yeah, again, not, you know, not crazy, I'm sure, if you ran the numbers of whatever pace they have to play at, but it was just, I mean, the frustration, like, all this frustration, put aside the draft pick and Pinto and all that, it was like, if you had said a month into the season, Senators are going to be playing 400, they're going to be last in the conference, there was no scenario where the fans weren't going to be booing and chanting and all this stuff, so.
105-point pace, by the way, is what they need to reach 100 points now. That, unlike the Oilers, that feels out of reach. It's great.
That feels out of reach, but I don't think they don't need, like, you know, they need 95 points. They need to just get into the playoffs and the season is a success.
Well, you know, I
so
the other issue there is they also have to now leapfrog literally every team in the conference that's not in the playoffs right now. So what's that? 7 other teams? They gotta do better than 7 other teams for their remaining 72 games of the season. No, 8, because of course that would, yeah, not bump them into the playoffs. So they need to do better than 8 teams for the entire rest of the season. And it's like, do you see them getting one over on the Islanders and the Panthers or the Leafs? Because that's who you gotta pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
let alone the Sabres.
Part of it, right, is that
the Penguins. Yeah, like,
we didn't think, you know, Detroit, we weren't really sold on, and they're coming back to earth, but they've banked a few points. And
totally.
The other thing is the Senators are in Toronto tonight.
Yep.
And then they play 9 of 10 at home.
Okay.
Which is a great chance to, you know, to get everything going, but also a great chance to really have that crowd get especially ugly. They've got Vancouver tomorrow, so back to back with travel, not great. They've got Calgary, and then next week they've got their games include Detroit, Islanders, and Panthers at home. So all teams that they're chasing. So they could make this up in a week and a half is the good news if you're looking for it. Or they could be completely dead and buried in a week and a half.
To me, it all boils down to this simple question. Did you really think the goalie from the Columbus Blue Jackets was going to fix your fucking problems? It's that simple. It's crazy. Yeah. It was a crazy bet.
Not been great.
Nope.
Yeah.
And even if he had been pretty good, they're still like not that good of a team. I don't watch these guys and go, oh, they're X away from making the playoffs.
You and I disagreed on this heading into the season, and so far, you're looking right.
No further questions, Your Honor. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Nuts.com. And folks, I don't know about you. I love snacking. I love just really eating a little too much throughout the day. And because of that, I'm always trying to eat a little healthier when I'm eating between meals. It's not always easy, but I recently received a shipment from Nuts.com and it's really helped because Nuts.com is your one-stop shop for freshly roasted nuts, dried fruits, sweets, and pantry staples like specialty flours and more. They have a wide selection. No matter what your taste is, you're going to find something that appeals to you. It's really, really strong option for people like me who would like to snack a little smarter these days. I'm a guy, I love a peanut, I love a cashew, really love a pistachio. Boy, you can't get me away from a pistachio. Nuts.com has basically all the options you want, and they'll even let you go a little beyond what you might expect. You're thinking, okay, they have like salted peanuts and cashews and stuff like that. Sure they do, of course, but they got more than that too. We're talking Cajun peanuts. We're talking bourbon pecans. We're talking cilantro lime pistachios. Basically, if you have a taste for it, they have what you're looking for. At Nuts.com, quality is a top priority, and that's why they roast their nuts and pop their popcorn the same day it ships, so they reach you as fresh as possible. Satisfaction guaranteed. And here's the great thing. You can order the products you're looking for a la carte, you know, one at a time, that kind of thing. Or you can get automated deliveries so that you're just getting the same stuff you like on a regular basis. You even get 5% off with auto deliveries, so can't go wrong. So here's what you're going to want to do. You go to nuts.com/puck, and they're running a deal right now where you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping when you spend $59 or more dollars. Can't go wrong there. That's nuts.com/puck.
This week's episode is brought to you by Game Time. One of the things they tell me to do on these ad reads is I'm supposed to look through the app and browse it and see if there's anything interesting in there. And I was doing that, and I just realized that Bert Kreischer's coming to Ottawa. That's pretty cool. I had not heard about that. Might have to go and get myself some tickets to that. And if I do, I will use Game Time because I know that I won't have to worry when I'm buying those tickets. I'm not going to have to worry about getting stuck with bad seats. I'm not going to have to worry about a bunch of hidden fees or that I don't get a good price because Game Time's got these killer last minute deals all in prices, the view from your seat, and the best price guarantee. So Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets, all in prices. What that means is they show you the total upfront. So you know you're getting a great deal before you check out. I think we've all had the experience of buying tickets where, you know, you've got your idea in mind what your price range is, and then suddenly you get in there, you think you found seats in that price range, you're feeling pretty good, pretty excited, and then you click a few times and you get to the end and suddenly the price is way, way higher than you thought it was going to be. None of that with Game Time. All in pricing right up front, and you can buy those tickets in seconds, just a couple of taps. It really is that easy. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PUCK for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code PUCK, P-U-C-K, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest prices, guaranteed.
All right, so we talked about the Canadian teams that are playing badly. And I guess we left out the Calgary Flames, but, you know, whatever. Let's talk about one, at least, that's doing insanely well, the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
These guys keep winning.
They do. They're banking a ton of points.
You know what their goal difference is right now?
I'm assuming very good. Plus 15?
No, through 12 games, they are plus 30.
Wow.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. That is...
That's crazy.
That's something.
That's what happens when
9-2-1.
Yeah. That's what happens when you've given up, like, two high-danger goals against all season.
Yeah. Rick Tocchet has cracked the code.
Yeah.
Guys, huddle up. What if we stopped everything? That's on you, Thatcher. And what if all our shots went in?
It's a winning formula if I ever heard one.
Check back with me and let me know.
Yeah. Now, like, we've reached the point where even, like, the local media who are normally, like, you know who's great is the Vancouver Canucks. These guys are unbelievable. Even they're starting to write articles like, okay, this is getting to be a little much, but here's the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because every indication that we have, figured out over the last 15 years to tell us whether things are, I was going to say real or fake. That's the wrong way to phrase it. Sustainable or not.
Yeah.
Everything, every warning light on the dashboard is flashing that this is not remotely sustainable.
Nope.
They have a PDO of 107, I think.
Is that a lot?
That's pretty high.
Yeah. Yep, they're shooting 13% at 5-on-5 and getting a 954 save percentage right now. Like, it's hard to contextualize those numbers. Obviously, 954 is... something no goalie could ever do. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's beyond Hasek Vezina years level. But like shooting 13%, like that's, you know, that's what Steven Stamkos did at the height of his powers. Just like a guy where it's like, no, I just make the puck go in the net. That's all I do. Mm-hmm. One in every eight shots they put up goes in, you know, like that's crazy. But you know, as you say, the underlying numbers are not great, but they're not bad either. They're running it at 49% of the expected goals in all situations. But scoring 70%. And I definitely think this is where you get in trouble, right? What I think is they have a really, really, really good goalie when he's healthy. And it looks like he's finally healthy. And that alone is going to add a couple of percentages to your goals for, or a couple of percentage points to your goals for percentage. You know, if it should be 49, it'll be 51 because you have an elite goalie. Mm-hmm. The high end of that lineup, same deal. They have enough talent where I go, you know, they can add a point or two. So if we're saying for the entire, starting tomorrow, the entire rest of the year, they score 52% of the goals and they're still playing, you know, a little under 50 in expected goals, they're still going to win a shitload of games. You don't have to be like a 55%, 58% goals for team to put up a ton of wins in this league. But like, honestly, you're never going to see things go better for a team over a 12-game stretch than they have again for the Vancouver Canucks this year.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
And I will say, like, unlike some other times, I don't get the sense that anybody, like you mentioned, media or otherwise, is like, no, I think the things that they do well contributes to whatever it is. Everybody understands. Like, if anything, it's been more a case of, they are banking so many points.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Like we did in the first segment, right? Like, you know, a bunch of, well, this is the pace they have to play at. They have to play at like an 85-point pace to hit the playoff mark of 95 points.
Yep.
That's very doable. You know, even if they do that, the rest of the year we'll get back, you know, they'll get into the playoffs and maybe won't feel like much of a threat, but they're, and you know, the other things that are happening is Elias Pettersson looks
He's like, so he's back sick, to, man.
Like, MVP level.
Oh, he rocks.
Quinn Hughes is...
You want to talk about MVP level?
This kid's going to... I tell you, man. This kid's going to win a Norris and move up to tier 2B if he keeps this up.
That's right.
And yeah, like, you know, Demko, it's goaltending, so it's a little weird. JT Miller looks like a player again.
Brock Besser looks like a player again. He's at 10 goals.
Yeah. And again, like, some of this is the, you know, it's the hot streak and it's going to calm down. But, you know, like when I say, like, with JT Miller, it's not just he's got, I'm looking at it now, he's got 18 points through 12 games. Okay, he's not going to score at 120 point pace, I don't think anyone thinks. But he's just that guy on the, like, he was, like, getting under Connor McDavid's skin all game.
Sure. Like,
and not even in, like, in the pesty way, but in the, like, you know, I'm going to, like, you know, I'm a fellow star who's going to, like, go nose to nose with you. Hey, you know what? It's cool. Vancouver's an entertaining team when it's clicking. And right now it's clicking beyond anything that could. But
the other thing I want to say is, say what you want about Patrick Alvin and some of the decisions he's made. This Roenick trade looks fucking unbelievable. I don't think it's a coincidence that they put Quinn Hughes with a guy who can skate backwards, and all of a sudden Quinn Hughes looks like a fucking mega star.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And I don't have a lot of us could not figure that bumps. Trade out. It was, you know, at the time they
gave up a lot for him. Yeah,
they gave up a lot, and it was, you know, at the time it was like, why are you trading a first round pick?
Totally.
For, you know, and yeah, the guy's 25 at the time the trade was made, but still, like, you're a rebuilding, and hey, so far the Vancouver logic has worked out beautifully on that.
Now, again, when these guys are on the ice at 5-on-5, they're running at 54% of the expected goals. You can't really ask for anything better than that, right? Like, that's awesome. That's unbelievable. They've scored 85% of the goals. And, that's not going to last, but the quality that they're putting out there right now, it feels like, I'll give you an example of a guy I think of as like a 54% XG guy, Adam Fox, right? Like, mm-hmm. a Norris quality defenseman. And I think so far this year, Quinn Hughes is more than just in that conversation. He's at the top of it. But these are the stats I would warn against, and I'm just going to put this out there. The Canucks' two other most used defensive pairs are Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers, 41% of the expected goals, and Ian Cole and Mark Friedman, 54% of the expected goals. I think...
Are you suggesting Ian Cole and Mark Friedman are not Adam Fox-level...
What
players?
I think what I'm suggesting is I can see it that as much as they've used Roenick and Hughes almost twice as much as any other pair, which is how it should be, right? And what I'm suggesting is I think those guys can do well against, you know, the bottom pair matchups or whatever you want to say. Like, you're not line matching with Ian Cole and Mark Friedman. You're just trying to get through those whatever 18 minutes a game. But Soucy and Myers, if there's a problem, that's where it's going to start. Well, I don't think it's me revealing any great mystery. Maybe the worst defenseman on the Vancouver Canucks is Tyler Myers. Yeah, no shit. He was really good the other night, though. I think Tuck had specifically called out, like, he was one of our best players the other night. So It's not outside the realm of possibility that, like, you know, they can, you know, keep it more or less even. And then Hughes and Roenick go out there and wail on everybody. And that's the end of it. You know, that's totally within the realm of possibility. But if I'm looking for cracks, I'm definitely starting on that second pair that's punching 30 something percent above its expected goals rate. That's all.
Yeah. Very fair.
But yeah, they look fucking great. And to your point about banking points, like, the only thing that kind of sucks for them is, you know, 792, they're probably like one of the three or four best teams in the league. They're, in fact, third best by points percentage right now, tied with the Rangers. And the best team in the league is in front of them. Right? Like, maybe you feel a little bit better about your playoff position if you're first in the conference after getting 19 points from your first 12 games. Or first in the conference, first in the division, however you want to put it. They're not, though, because Vegas is kicking ass to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just funny. And you know, as well as they're playing, you know who's right behind them? The Kings are 3 points back with a game in hand. So
yeah. I wrote about the Kings on the weekend. Like, they're very quietly.
They're rock.
Well, man. Maybe I should say very quietly. I'm sure people in LA are like, no, you East Coast bozo. It's only quiet to you. But they're good. They're good.
They are.
They're beating some good teams too.
Absolutely.
And losing to some good teams. Like, they've kind of only lost to elite teams, which.
Hey, you're going to lose to elite teams sometimes, you know?
Can.
But one other team, speaking of the Pacific Division, one other team we got to shout out. Break up the fucking Anaheim Ducks, folks. I know they just lost last night to Pittsburgh. All the problems in Pittsburgh are over. Playing the Sharks was exactly what they needed. But before that, they were on a 6-game winning streak. Now, a lot of the, I think 2 or 3 of those games were in overtime. But I also thought, you know, watching their games, they looked pretty good. They looked better than I think that anybody would say they had any right to be.
Yeah,
coming into the year.
And fun too, like high scoring, fun, and doing it without largely Trevor Zegras contributing, at least on, you know, as far as on the score sheet. I know there's some Ducks fans who said, you know, he's playing better than the numbers, but that's a good sign. Like, it's, you know, it's not good when a guy who's one of your franchise pieces isn't playing well, but when he's not playing well, like, slumps are going to happen.
Sure.
And when he's not playing well and you're still filling the net, that's not bad.
Yep. No, I just wanted to shout out the Ducks. Like, I think we said it last week that, you know, maybe it just all makes Dallas Eakins look bad. That they're effectively an unchanged roster and they're, you know, a couple games above 500.
Great. When Rick Tocchet's team comes back to earth, Greg Cronin's going to be right in that coach of the year discussion. This is exactly 100%. The sort of thing voters love.
Yep. Now, here's the thing. It's like, you know, in those 6 games, I just pulled it up. The Ducks did get outshot by 44, rather. I did the math wrong on that. So that's not a way you want to go through 6 games, but they won all of them. So they can just go, score effects. It happens, you know, whatever. Fuck it. Who cares?
Yep. They can. And we're into feels like year 8 of the John Gibson is going to be good again this year. Guess what? It's been pretty good so far this year.
Him and Dostal, really good. Both 920.
Yeah.
Can't ask for more than that.
God, I'd trade John Gibson so quick if I could, if I was Pat Verbeek right now.
I would be on the phone with the Edmonton Oilers. You give us a couple first round picks, we can make your problems go away, brother.
I did not even think of that. That's
Now if I'm the Ducks, I don't want to be reaching a hand down to some loser fucking team in my division and going, why don't we help you out, you know? But
are you really helping them out if you
only one way to find out, you know? But yeah, I wonder.
If you were the Ducks, and I'm interested in this now.
Okay.
Would you trade John Gibson and take back Jack Campbell if it meant you could get assets from the Oilers?
That's what I'm saying.
Just
like
a salary dump?
It would have to be good assets. It would have to be good assets. It wouldn't be like, oh, give me your like fifth best pro. Like, I'm talking a first round pick and a really good prospect, of which the Oilers do have a few.
But you're getting Campbell's easier to buy out. He's cheaper. He's not better, but yeah.
Name a team that's in more win now mode than the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
They have to do something. They might have to do something desperate. I don't want to say they have to, but they might have to. And if you can get them to take a bad contract off your hands, how many years does Gibson have left? I guess that's the only question.
It's the same as Campbell.
Oh, well then, yeah.
So it's three more years after this year.
No problem. I would be happy to make this trade if I'm for Beacon. And again, if I'm getting something good back, because we have Dostal. We don't need.
That's it, right? Yeah.
We don't need like a decent goalie coming back. Maybe you're just putting Jack Campbell in the minors and calling up somebody else or signing somebody else or something. But yeah, I'd think about it for sure. If I could get the Oilers, like if Ken Holland feels like the walls are closing in on him,
which he should,
he definitely should. I can help you out here, brother. All you got to do is take this goalie who is also bad, but less buyoutable. But he's having a good start to the year. Maybe he's fixed something, etc.
Jack Campbell back to that California sunshine.
Oh yeah,
dude, we might be onto something here.
This is a good idea. If this happens, must credit
3 minutes after we finish recording.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's all I really had to say about the Ducks. They're playing good. Shout out to them.
They're fun.
Yeah. And you know what? So is Arizona. Shout out to them as well. They're a game above 500. They're a game above NHL 500.
Yeah. Fake 500.
Right. They're regular 500. And in fact, they're 458 in regulation, it says here. That's not good. But they keep winning. Minnesota's a point below them in the standings. That's all you can really ask for. Anyway, we'll be right back with some more news.
Our next partner is Uncommon Goods. We are officially in the holiday shopping season. And when you're scratching names off your list, when you're going and filling up that cart, getting those gifts that you're going to give in a few weeks, the best ones to get are the ones where you're actually excited to give the gift because you want to see the reaction that the person is going to have because you feel like you really nailed it. It's something that's, you know, kind of cool and creative, and you're going to get that reaction where they go, where did you get that? How did you even come up with that idea? Those are the best gifts to give, and Uncommon Goods can be your secret weapon in finding them. Uncommon Goods is here to make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for the most remarkable and truly unique gifts for everyone on your list. Whether you're shopping for your secret Santa, for your entire family, for those hard-to-find in-laws, friends, you name it, Uncommon Goods can help you figure out exactly what they want. I'm a big fan of, for my kids especially, they have these do-it-yourself kits, a whole bunch of different kinds actually, where you can go send off and maybe it's hot sauce, maybe it's a certain type of food, certain type of baking. You get everything shipped to you and then it becomes a little project the kids can do on their own or maybe with you. And it becomes a fun, kind of cool, creative thing that they can go and do. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent business. These fine products are often made in small batches, so you should shop now before they sell out this holiday season. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. It's not those same lackluster gifts that you can find just anywhere. You're going to be able to find gifts at the mall. You're not going to get this level of creativity when you go and try to do it that way. Every purchase that you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. And they've donated more than $2.5 million to date. Check them out, uncommongoods.com/puck. Again, that's uncommongoods.com/puck. Get that holiday shopping done and get that where did you ever get that reaction.
All right. We mentioned it earlier. There has been another lawsuit filed against Chicago by another player who claims he was abused by Brad Aldrich. And it seems like it really jogged everyone's memory of, oh, yeah, well, I guess there was a second player named in that Block and Jenner report. And this is that kind of.
Not named, but mentioned. It was John Doe.
Right, not identified, but like, I don't know how you want to put it. But apparently, like, people have already figured out who this one was too. Like, don't do that, people. You know? But yeah, so we'd seen over the summer that and heard mention that you know, some progress was being made toward Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville being able to come back into the league, which I think we were both like, oh, that would be bad if they did that. But now that feels like it's on hold.
Yep.
Because of this, we obviously don't have a ton of details. I think there was a mention that the lawyers are seeking like a jury case. I would imagine this gets settled out of court as well, just because you don't want all these details becoming a matter of public record more so than they already are.
And it's not, as my understanding, that the lawsuit is news, but what's being detailed is not
correct. Yeah,
new. This is not like it's, which then leads to, you know, does this expose the Blackhawks to further punishment from the league? No, unless new information turns up. This is
right.
This is not a new layer being uncovered. This is simply one of the alleged victims taking his right to have his turn in court.
So, yep. And
see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know that there's much more that that we can say about it right now. We just like don't know very much. Again, beyond, you know, the broad details. And if you read the story, the details are bad. They're really bad. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know really what to say about it, except that, you know, you hope the player bringing this lawsuit is in a good place, and hope, and maybe him bringing this lawsuit kind of indicates that he's at a better place than he was a few years ago when all this news, you know, first broke or whatever. And apparently he wasn't in that place, but we just don't know. But needed to mention it on the show, of course. On another, you know, more current hockey related note, Jack Hughes week to week with, have they said it's a shoulder injury or did they say it wasn't a shoulder injury? I saw some conflicting stuff about this yesterday.
Oh, I didn't see it. It was,
oh, okay.
Upper body,
the classic, you know, basically anything above the waist, you know, you figure it out. But week to week, that's not good news. He felt for a little while there like the front runner for the MVP. Yeah. But a guy
not good news, and yet when you saw the injury,
yep,
and how he went off, I think a lot of us were like, oh crap, this could be significant. And week to week is significant, but it still felt like, I think it was Elliot who phrased it as the worst case scenario was avoided, which the worst case looked like this guy's going to miss half a year kind of deal.
Yep. By the way, it is indeed his shoulder. It's his right shoulder, it says. Like I said, I just saw some stuff that people were like, is it his shoulder? And people go, well, not so fast. Let's not say shoulder. But it is shoulder, apparently. So, yeah, you never want to see a guy who's going as good as he was. Well, I mean, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, obviously. But you don't want to see a guy who's like leading the MVP discussion.
And also, like, we were just getting ready to start, like, Jack Hughes MVP, Quinn Hughes Norris.
Luke Hughes
Calder, ?
Yep. Like,
how cool would that have been? And maybe, I mean, if week to week ends up being 2 weeks, then maybe we get back to that.
Yeah, I usually err on the side of a month plus is what week to week
means.
It
did feel like that when they said that.
But yeah, the Devils are gonna be facing some tough tests. Let's say they're playing exceptionally well. I will say that. But you know, you're losing like again an MVP style candidate. First game back, they lose to the Avalanche. They give up a shitload of goals. Not great. You know, again, you just don't want to see, and Luke Hughes got rocked last night too. I don't know if you saw that.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Ross Colton really gave him the business. But yeah, so there is that, and it's just something that, you know, the headline I saw this morning was, we have the next man up mentality. It's like, right, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. But and they have enough good players that they can totally weather this storm. But
I want to see a team that doesn't have that mentality. They're like, we, our mentality.
You know what? Let's have Connor McDavid get hurt. And the Oilers are just like, you know what? Not a next man up mentality.
Our mentality.
We're just going to wait till he gets back.
We're going to throw an empty jersey on the ice and just have hope that they skate around it. Because what else could we possibly do?
Yep. So, yeah, there's that for the Devils. The other one, also in the Metro, big injury. Well, injury, I guess, isn't the issue here. But Freddie Anderson has a blood clotting issue, they're saying.
Yeah.
And so they had to go out and get Yaro Halak. Anderson will be out an indeterminate amount of time. Take as long with something like that, take as much time as you need. But really, you never want to hear about a blood clotting thing. Cause that's one of those, like, this isn't, oh, the guy messed up his knee. This is like, his quality of life could be permanently affected. I don't know any of the details, obviously, but blood clotting is like really scary shit.
Yeah. So. And I mean, we hear it sometimes with athletes and it doesn't seem to end up being a big deal as far as impacting their career for the long term and long term health and what have you, and then other times not so much. So you just wish him the best, and meanwhile, a really good Carolina team apparently has already got a contingency plan.
Right. Well, that, and also they do have Kochetkov this whole time, right? Like they went into the year kind of planning, we're going to run a rotation. Now their goaltending, it should be said this year, their goaltending has been bad on the balance. Team 876. That's no good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, there are worse old hands out there than Yaro Halak. Let's definitely put it that way as well. But if you were looking for stability in that Carolina crease, you're just not gonna get it. And the circumstances here are obviously very frightening and upsetting and all that kind of stuff. And again, you just wish the best for Freddie Anderson, but you know, this is a really good team. I think we can say that, you know, for the most part, they're going to be put in a position to succeed. They've won 5 of the last 6. So, you know, they're righting the ship a little bit.
They're getting there. Yep.
That's all, you know, they're a good team. I think everybody agrees with that. And it shouldn't be crazy to see them continue through this situation without really skipping a beat. But you just got to say, like, you know, you wish the best for Anderson. One last thing I wanted to talk about this week, which is Greg's article about the advanced, like, puck and player tracking stats.
Yes.
Did you see this yesterday?
I absolutely saw it. Yep.
So Greg was like, I tried for 2 hours to figure out who the slowest skater in the NHL is this season. And I already forget who it is. It's some guy that you would have been like, oh yeah, it makes sense that he's one of the slower guys in the league. But he's like, I tried to. It took me 2 hours to figure it out. And why is that, basically? And the answer is, and this is what we said, I think, when these stats came out.
Well, we wondered when the stats came out because they all say, like, they give you a percentile, not a ranking, and then it just says lower 50 percentile.
Right.
And some of us are like, is the data not specific enough? Is there, like, why would they be that vague?
But we correctly sussed out very easily that it's because you're not allowed to say a guy's bad.
toughest players in the world, but also huge.
Huge babies.
Little snowflake babies.
Yep. So yeah, it's just like, it's just funny that Greg got multiple like quotes from people in the game that are like, oh, the reason why is because these guys don't want you to know how bad they suck.
Mm-hmm.
This is data that could make us look bad. And, yep. and make us the target of, I don't know what, like fucking tweets that are going, oh, you sure look slow out there, brother. And the stats back me up on this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This league is so fucking funny. Like, the only league.
From Greg, the NHL and NHLPA can be very sensitive about creating negativity around their players.
The only league where it's like, stats are actually pretty scary.
Damn. I hope they don't find out about this podcast.
I know.
We're done for.
Yeah, they'll be dispatching SEAL Team 6 to me and you.
That's right.
Compromise us to a permanent end for
yes.
for saying what Jack Campbell's save percentage is.
Yeah, that's right.
Take the shot. And Jack Campbell's like, don't take the shot, don't take the shot. But, you know, he misunderstood. yeah, I just thought that was such a funny, like, the explanation is exactly as stupid as you thought it would be.
That's right.
It's because we're afraid the numbers will make us sad.
Yeah, that's it.
Big thumbs up. Salute to you guys. I don't really have anything else to talk about this week. Or can you think of anything that we're missing?
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, I guess you know, if we're talking about good teams, we should say the Rangers are 9-1-2 or 9-2-1.
Yep.
They're also really good. The formula is exactly what it's always been, and it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them.
Now
again, I don't know that's a formula that works in the playoffs when you have to like play nothing but good teams all season, you know, for 3 months or whatever. But they got a great goalie, they got great top end talent. It's really all you need.
And a new coach who historically doesn't have a great shelf life, but has been successful when he arrives in places in Pierre Laviolette. So,
yep, absolutely.
Not bad.
I guess the only thing is, since we did the show last week, Adam Fox went on LTIR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure how long that's supposed to, I haven't seen much in the way of reporting on like, here, you know, he's day to day, week to week, whatever. But
yeah. If you're is he LTIR?
LTIR, yeah. So he's at least
that's 10 games.
Yeah, right. So that's a good chunk of the season to lose a guy who's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep on rolling. You know, that was last Thursday they put him on LTIR, and since then, they have 3 points from 2 games. It's all you can ask for, I guess.
I could ask for 4.
But yeah.
I would settle for 3.
Yeah. And they beat the Red Wings, so it's not like they're out there mm-hmm. beating the Vegas Golden Knights, but you only get to play who's in front of you. Minnesota tomorrow night. That's the team they already lost to. They lost in the shootout last week. So anyway. Oh, you know what? I forgot to say this earlier. Someone posted the stat. The Flyers lost to the 0-10-1 Sharks. Remember when the Coyotes started the year 0-10-1?
Oh, no.
The Flyers lost to them, too, in 17-18. The only team in NHL history to lose twice that was to a team that was winless to start 10 or more games in a season.
Nice. These slump busters.
Big salute to the Philadelphia Flyers.
Johnny Torts and the Slump Busters are
That's
coming to
right.
town.
It's just funny that in 17-18, the Flyers were trying to win.
Yeah.
True. You know? So, yeah, you got any plugs for us?
Find me at The Athletic. It's Hall of Fame induction week, so I'm doing Hall of Fame stuff. I've got a piece later this week where I'm going to look at kind of my annual look at some of the tougher, what are shaping up to be some of the tougher cases among current players. And I got a piece today that I wrote that I've been wanting to write for a while on guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame and won't be in the Hall of Fame, but who at some point in their career you were like, oh, that guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. And then for whatever reason, they didn't get there.
Give me a couple examples. Who are we talking about here?
Like, maybe the ultimate example, Jimmy Carson starts his career with like shattering records, still holds a record for goals by a teenager, 55 goal season as a 19-year-old.
That's crazy. And then he went on to host that talk show.
Yeah, exactly. Three seasons he had like, 140 goals, almost 300 points.
That's crazy.
Just crazy. Ends up being over half his career total. He's out of the NHL entirely by 27.
Wow.
Some of the other guys, Danny Heatley, Dion Phaneuf, Norris runner-up in year two.
Wow, yeah.
Scored, I think I looked up the number. The goals that he had in his first three seasons, the fifth most ever of a defenseman through 3 years, and I think the guys ahead of him are like Bork, Potvin, and I can't remember the other two.
Yeah, didn't he have like one or two 20-goal seasons? Like
he had a 20-goal and then back-to-back 17 and was just crushing people with hit. Like he was Scott Stevens with who also scored 20 goals. And then he wasn't. Yep. Hockey's weird. How many times do we look at someone and go, that guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I just pulled up his page. 20 goals his first season. 50 points and 17 goals is second. 60 points and 17 goals is third. He's out of Calgary a year and a half later.
Yeah.
That's wild.
And not even, that trade with the Leafs, they didn't even get that much for him.
Nope.
I've mentioned this before, but one of the funniest things, if you can still find it, is the, I want to say HF Boards thread. It may have been one of the other ones. It may have been like a Flames board, but when that trade was announced, the Flames have traded Dion Phaneuf to the Leafs, but we didn't know what was coming back. Mm-hmm. And you just see Flames fans reacting and speculating on what they're getting.
9 first round picks. Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's just, I don't remember who the Leafs prospects were back then, but all of them, we're getting Shed, we're getting this, we're getting, and then they find out it's like, no, it's Ian White and Nicholas Hagman, and you're going to like it. I was like, oh, okay. Probably still worked out well for them.
Who's going in the Hall of Fame this year?
It's Turgeon and the goalies.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They backfilled all the kind of Mike Vernon, Tom Barrasso, and Lundqvist, of course.
That's right. Yep. Sure, why not? Go nuts. My plugs are epringside.com. I'm writing about the NHL. I'm writing about the NCAA. And we're having a good time over there. I don't know. There's a lot going on. So just stay tuned. EPRinkside.com. Use the code ILOVEEP. 15 months for the cost of 12, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, Patreon.com/PuckSoup, where yesterday I made Sean watch a movie I'd never seen before. A little film called The Love Guru. And we just...
How are you feeling 24 hours later? Sometimes you see a movie and you have an instant reaction.
Yeah.
24 hours later, you're like,
I just, I guess my big thing is I don't know how Vern Troyer didn't win best supporting that year.
Yep.
He was so unbelievable.
Sure.
Really believable. As the coach.
I believe that he was short. Like every time he was on screen.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy is a super short dude.
Well, because at first I was watching it and I'm like, oh, this must be a Lord of the Rings thing. Like they're calling mm-hmm. so much attention to how short he is. Surely this is like a special effects trick and not just like kind of making the joke that this guy is short.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? And that actually, I looked it up. He is, like you said, actually really short.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how that worked out. The movie sucks. It's fucking horrible. If you want to hear me and Sean just like live reacting to my first viewing, and I'm sure Sean's 30th, 40th, something like that.
Yeah, something like about that. Yep. Yeah.
It was something. I'll put it this way. It was well received despite just the amount of times that we just sighed at a joke in exasperation.
Yeah, a lot of people people on the Discord seem to like it, but they pointed out that there's like occasional long stretches of silence.
We're,
I mean, that's we had penciled that in for laughter.
Right.
The movie is a comedy.
Yeah.
That's just us reacting to the jokes.
I don't know if people know this. This is a movie that's like with credits and three different full musical numbers, like 84 minutes long or something like that.
Yep.
With credits. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there were long credits. I think it was like 6 minutes of credits.
Yeah. And not like credits with like a scene at the end or anything.
No. And you're going, oh, okay, well, surely it's such a joke dense movie. This is like an episode of 30 Rock, right? Where it's just like, there's a joke every 4 seconds.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of just like shoe leather that they're laying down in this movie to explain who people
are. And a lot of jokes followed by Mike Myers looking directly at the camera.
And explaining the joke. This is one of the all-time great films. So yeah, I'm a big fan of the Love Guru and watching the Love Guru. This is one of those movies, folks, where some people might say it's so bad it's good. Not me. I would just say it's regular bad.
Yeah, but I'm with you.
Yeah. So check all that out, patreon.com/pucksoup, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Pucksoup.